I was recently looking back through a few exam results. I still have the papers from my school days. I suppose they're historical documents now. They're over 50 years old. I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that I couldn't find any comments about not concentrating in class, though I found more than a few about not working hard enough, which I suppose could amount to the same thing. The worst comment I got was from my chemistry teacher at Christmas in 1973, when I was 17 years and 11 months old. I got 16% in the exam, and he wrote, "A disgraceful result. He must do some work, otherwise he will not even pass the leaving cert." He was right. I did little more than look at the chemistry paper for the leaving cert, and I came away with an NG, meaning no grade. God love him, he tried very hard. His name was Mr. Burrell, and he had shocking red hair, and he came from Offaly, and we imaginatively called him Boggy Burrell. That's all I remember about him. But he was a nice enough man, and he tried his best with me. I did better in other subjects. When I was 14 and 6 months old, my English teacher, Mr. Anderson, wrote of me, he has developed a good, interested, intelligent approach to the subject. That was about as good as it got in my school days. I struggled to focus on the present. I still do. To me, the goal of living in the now sometimes feels like an instrument of torture. I either find the present too serious or not serious enough in the areas I want it to be serious in. Of course, it helps if you like what you're doing. I didn't like chemistry. I did like English. I've no idea why I did chemistry. My father wanted me to be a businessman like him. I tried desperately to follow in his footsteps, to be the good son. It would appear my unconscious had other ideas. Even in business, the chemistry would be of little use. The present isn't necessarily the same thing as presence, an essence or spirit that wants your attention. There can be something holy in distraction, a truth that needs hearing, seeing, and touching. An awakening to something that has been there all along. Sometimes it's the stepping away from a planned route. It's the following of the sound of a song in the woods to see where it leads. The finding of a door that opens to mystery that is the key to life. The mystery, the old unaccountable unfolding. The iron trees in the park suddenly remember forests. It becomes possible to think of going. They're part of the poem that Joanna read earlier. The iron tree in me, the hard, unbending, artificial structure that I tried to make myself into, had yet to remember forests. The possibility of going somewhere greener and softer would be another 20 years away for me. The English philosopher John Stuart Mill once wrote that a young person is like a tree which requires to grow and develop itself on all sides according to the tendency of the inward forces which make it a living thing. If you shape your particular tree to try to be pleasing through the eyes of others, then it's my experience that you take an axe and a chainsaw to something that's created by something beyond the self, something made in the image of God, if you will. The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending. We lay waste our powers. I used these words in a prayer earlier, though it is in fact a poem by William Wordsworth called "The World is Too Much With Us." These words by Wordsworth mean something to me, and yet I'm no more immune to wasting my powers than the next man or woman not just getting and spending, but doing other things too, like endless desk tidying, for instance. Anything to avoid opening up to vulnerability or the possibility of being wrong, of things not being perfect. The modern world is geared up for getting and spending, isn't it? Wordsworth wrote his poem in about 1802 in response to the Industrial Revolution, and it was first published in 1807. How much louder now the clarion call for consumption. And yet, the older I get, the less interest I have in being part of the world of getting. And I'm sure I'm not alone. Perhaps we're coming to a moment of realization now. Perhaps the world is too much with us, and we need the compensation of poetry in life. And I don't mean the narrower definition of rhyming words, though certainly for me, that too. I mean more and more moments of finding beauty in life, not as another form of getting, but allowing ourselves time to drift off. But when goldfinch or kingfisher rent the veil of the usual, pinions whispered and braced, as I stooped unwieldy and brimming. These are words from Seamus Heaney's poem, Drifting Off. Recently I was walking near the Custom House and walking by the bank of the Liffey. I spotted a swan there. It was curled into itself on a set of steps leading into the water. In amongst the litter and the hustle and bustle of city life, it looked at peace with the world, and it drew me. I went down a few steps to get nearer. It raised its head, hissed. But then, seeing I was no threat, curled back into itself. Beside it lay a discarded McDonald's drink container, but it didn't, nor could it, take away from the inherent beauty of the bird and the moment. I could feel the pinions in the wings of my imagination brace a little in readiness for flight. I could feel myself lift out of time a little. I have hawked you through the world of church and state and meanest trade. But this evening, halter off, never again will it go on. On the south side of ditches, there is grazing of the sun. No more haggling with the world. As I said these words, he grew wings upon his back. Now I may ride him every land my imagination knew. These are words from Pegasus by Patrick Kavanagh, that express something of the comfort of taking ourselves out of the world as we know it, of getting beyond the arguments and debates, listening to and speaking a language the stubbornly unpoetic cannot hear. The Swedish poet and Nobel laureate Thomas Tranströmer put it this way: tired of all who come with words, words, but no language. I went to the snow-covered island. The wild does not have words. The unwritten pages spread out on all sides. I come upon the tracks of roe deer in the snow. Language, but no words. In around 1967, I came to Ireland with my family to live. I was 11 or 12, I can't exactly remember. We went on a family holiday to Clare once, a cottage in the country somewhere near Spanish Point. We weren't long in Ireland. I suppose I was in my early teens, and maybe not even that. There was a lake for fishing in the hills nearby, peaceful, quiet, and with dark water. It drew me, and it suited me. The sound of flies and the heat and the warmth of the summer sun were with me as I wrote the sermon. There was a line of travelers' caravans on the side of the road that I would pass on my way to the lake. I saw a girl standing at the edge of the road, watching me as I went by. I watched her. I don't remember if we spoke. I don't know, was it once or more often that we saw each other? But she was exotic to me. She caught me and held my attention. I was half frightened and half fascinated. I'm sure there was something of the erotic in it for me back then, but there was much more. Her sense of freedom, the feeling that she was standing in and with herself, meant something to me. A sense in me that she belonged in and of the landscape. I know now that my noticing her and her noticing me set pinions in motion, and it was enough. Paying attention to the things that mean something to us, to the things that catch our senses, whether they catch the senses of those of the other or not, is important. Whether she remembered me afterwards or not is immaterial. I remembered and still remember her. Or at least the feeling of that day, and that's what counts. Being distracted by her brings me into a world of imagination. It allows a freedom of heart that helps me see a fuller picture of my being, helps me remember myself, should I begin to forget. I didn't know then that I had my place in the landscape too. I felt out of step with something. But I didn't know then it was okay to step to a different tune. More than okay. It was my right. It's everybody's right. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears the beat of a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. I had my own inner beat, and I didn't know it was that I was feeling as I walked down the quiet road in Clare all those years ago. We all have our own inner beat. We need to listen to the song of our hearts, look for the cues from however or whenever they might have come from. A stranger we pass on a road, or whatever catches our eye or ear. Something that leads us to remember ourselves. Something that might draw us back into the center of our being. They are holy distractions that, once connected with, will lead us to the unexpected riches of time out of time. Upon a headland by a whinny bush, a hare sits looking down a leaf-lapped furrow. There's an old plough upside down on a weedy ridge, and someone is shouldering home a saddle harrow. Out of that childhood country, what fools climb to fight with tyrants, love, and life, and time. Amen.